hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the line, fight, fighting and falling down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought out key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man. You walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com. Well, the Sons of Confederate Veterans did an interesting and defiant thing yesterday. And they rented a plane and it flew with a large Confederate flag and their name, the SCV, or the Sons of Confederate Veterans, over the NASCAR race in I believe, if I'm not mistaken here, in Bristol, Tennessee. Now, this is the second time they've done that. In June, there was a Confederate flag flown over the NASCAR race at Alabama's Talladega Super Speedway. That the one last month said defund NASCAR. This is part of the pushback and fight back against the utterly cowardly decision by NASCAR to ban Confederate flags from the racetracks, both on the part, both on the part of any of the vehicles that might be in competition or people in the crowd. Not allowed to wave a Confederate flag. This is, of course, further utter political correctness. Now, you know, the argument, and it's very sneaky, the argument is, well, it would be offensive to some people. Well, perhaps it would be. But surely offensiveness should not cancel one's right to free speech. Because once you go there, once you say, well, that's offensive to somebody, the vast majority of people attending the NASCAR races are white, so relatively few blacks, and not all blacks consider the Confederate flag some horrible sign of slavery. But once you go in that down that route, where things are banned because somebody might be offended, well then, what isn't offensive? There are Jews who find the Christian cross offensive, and there have been places where that it has been banned. Well, I happen to find the rainbow flag. Now, the rainbow was a wonderful symbol. Goes back to the Bible. All was a symbol of hope. it's such a magical thing. But I find it, the rainbow flag, the way it's now being hijacked for the LGBTQ, et cetera, agenda, I find it offensive. Should it be banned to accommodate my feelings? Well, of course, whether it should or it shouldn't, what are the likelihoods, likelihood of it being banned? Well, exactly. Not much. and that's the problem. That's the problem with the one-sided banning of things because they might be offensive. Anyway, NASCAR, to its ever-loving disgrace, banned the Confederate flag. So I think it's important to push back. And there was a certain cost for the Sons of Confederate Veterans, but they rented a plane in both occasions and flew over the racetrack, which is public airspace, so the NASCAR cannot ban it, and they flew the Confederate flag in defiance. And I'm hoping that more people will perhaps discover their courage and and insist that bring the Confederate flag and perhaps even dare the tyrants to well, what are they going to do? Throw them out? Well, maybe they would. It's really important though to fight back and not to allow the corporate tyrants who clearly have loyalty to nothing. Perhaps the bottom line, but I'm not even totally sure it's that. I think it's virtue signal. Anyway, it looks as though here in Canada we're about to embark on yet another retreat, another trashing of our traditional culture, and that is, it's now, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, there's going to be an announcement next week that the Edmonton Eskimos in the Canadian Football League will be changing their name. There's been politically correct complaints about that for many years. But now several of their sponsors, and I'm told including Boston Pizza and a big insurance company, have threatened the Eskimos with withdrawing their, I guess, advertising if they don't change their name. I would have liked to have seen more determined resistance. And not by that I mean quietly go out and find other sponsors who approve of the name Edmonton Eskimos and will promise to advertise. advertising is, in the cases like this, is not done because the company cares one way or the other about the Edmonton Eskimos. They care because the advertising at their televised games gives them public exposure at a time when there's a relatively captive audience of presumably the people they want to engage with their product. So it's not a matter of charity. And I really think that the Eskimos should fight back, but apparently they will not. And I would hope that people for whom this is important will take revenge upon these scumbag companies like Boston Pizza and boycott them. Won't go. And the important thing is let them know that you won't go. why you won't go. Now, of course, if you're going to do that, it's important that you follow through. For instance, in my case, it would be almost an idle threat. I don't like pizza. I've only been to Boston Pizza once in my life and had a bad experience. And I shared that with you about a week ago on this program. But if it's a realistic threat, a realistic proposition, let the local Boston Pizza know that you deeply resent their meddling. And the argument against the name Edmonton Eskimos is ludicrous. For one thing, it recognizes a group of whom there are very, very, very few in the city of Edmonton. Edmonton's a city of 1 million people, and there is no sizable Eskimo population there. They're mostly in the Arctic, right? It recognizes a native group. It's just a name, so there's nothing judgmental or pejorative about it. Doesn't say the dirty Edmonton Eskimos or the primitive Edmonton Eskimos or anything like that. It actually recognizes and honors them, as in my opinion, did team names like the Cleveland Indians and the Atlanta Braves and so on in terms of Indian people. It's political correctness gone insane to say recognizing them is somehow bad, because we're always told that we should be striving for inclusion and diversity. Well, this is including them, isn't it? Unfortunately, we are living in a time of insane hysteria. My guess is not more than a handful of Eskimos in the Canadian High Arctic give a seal's rear end about whether the Edmonton Eskimos are called the Edmonton Eskimos or the Edmonton Magpies or the Edmonton Dish Rags. It's not important. But it is important to the wrecking crew that are trying to destroy our society, our traditions. Everything must go. Statues, everything. Oh yeah, speaking of statues, an interesting story that just came out a little bit earlier this evening has to do with a statue in Oakville, Ontario, which is just west of Toronto. And it has gotten the goat of somebody or other, and it's a statue honoring I believe it's the 16th SS Division. I'll just check that out now. Let me see where that is. Anyway, it was in Oakville, Ontario, and it was vandalized yesterday, apparently, with Nazi. Let me see if I can get this right. Nazi. Nazi monument, I think. I'm going to get this up for you. It was vandalized. There was graffiti on this SS, on this monument to SS soldiers, and this was the 14th SS Division. They fought really courageously, and a fair number of them came to Canada. This was the 1st Galician Division, it's located at St. Volodymyr's Ukrainian Cemetery in Oakville, there were spray painted or painted on were the words Nazi War Monument. Anyway, the police looked treating as a potential hate crime, that's going to be interesting. And this was the Galician division of the SS, and they were Ukrainian nationalists. Now, it will be argued by the communists and Jews, many Jews who have already strongly opposed the very presence in Canada of members of the Galician Division, it'll be argued that they were Nazis. Well, even if they were, I would say, so what? But in point of fact, these were nationalists. Now, when the Germans invaded in 1941, forestalling Stalin's planned invasion of Germany, the German armies moved into the Ukraine, which was had been occupied by the Soviet forces since about very early 1920s. Briefly after the First World War, the Ukraine became an independent country. Ukraine had prior to that been divvied up between Austria, Hungary, and Russia, and there's a fluid population. Some Ukrainians still remain in Poland today, but Poland did not exist until after the First World War. I mean, as a independent separate country. Anyway. Most of the Ukrainians were suffering under communist tyranny. Perhaps the greatest genocide in Europe of the 20th century occurred in 1932-33, when the communists, led by a number of sadistic Jewish commissars, deliberately starved to death 8 to 10 million Ukrainians. They simply seized all the food on the farms, the animals, seeds, everything. And the population starved. And this was to break the resistance of the Ukrainian peasantry. Anyway, when the Germans poured in June 1941, in many parts of the Ukraine and other parts of Eastern Europe, they were welcomed with open arms. They were seen, quite rightly, as liberators from the communists. What the Ukrainians wanted was not to be part of the greater German Reich, and nor do I think that's what Hitler wanted. Hitler wanted traditionally German lands to be reincorporated into Germany, like Austria, the Sudetenland, and other places, but not the Ukraine. But there was an alliance. You've got to understand that. There was an alliance between Ukrainian nationalists, who did not want the Russians to come back, and the German forces, which were seen as liberators. That does not make those Ukrainians national socialists. In some cases, they may have been, but primarily they were nationalists who wanted to regain their country's independence. Now, sometimes in a war, you are faced with two alternatives. You go with this group or you go with that group. Well, they didn't want to go back with that group, being the Soviet communists, so they allied themselves with Germany. That's the accurate, simple part of it. Calling them Nazis, which of course is pejorative to begin with, is one, not, it's not helpful, and it's not accurate. Here's an interesting story, and it's from the Vatican, and the Vatican is telling bishops how to handle sex abuse claims, and there have been a fair number of sex abuse claims against the Catholic Church. Bishops urge not to dismiss sex abuse claims. In the latest attempt to address its long-running crisis over clergy sex abuse, the Vatican on Thursday of this week published guidelines for bishops that lay out how to handle such cases and direct them not to dismiss accusations that are submitted anonymously, seem vague, or appear initially dubious. Now, I've got some problems with that. I certainly, of course, agree that cases of sexual abuse by the clergy or by anybody else should be investigated. I completely agree with that. However, I do have a problem with the order not to dismiss accusations that are submitted anonymously, seem vague, or appear initially dubious. I'm not sure what initially dubious is, but vague or anonymous. Frankly, I don't think anybody, no matter how bad, should be victimized by anonymous complaints. Why? Well, if the complaint's anonymous, there is no real way to check out its validity. And why wouldn't a person who has knowledge of an incident, whether it's because they themselves were a victim or involved, or because they observed something, why would they not come forward and give their name? Well, like you said, they're afraid. And that may, in some occasions, instances, be understandable. However, anonymity allows almost carte blanche for mistakers. And many a reputation has been ruined by anonymous accusations which are then given credence. And as almost anybody can tell you who's ever been in a court case, it's very difficult to fight back against anonymous charges. And I saw this up close and personal during the Ernst Sindel National Security Certificate hearings back in from 2003 to 2005. Ernst, in response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks, the then Canadian Liberal government of Jean Chrétien introduced a wide-ranging bill of legislation called Bill C-36. And one of the things it did was to allow the government to deport anybody who was not a Canadian citizen, so a landed immigrant or a visitor, by declaring them a threat to national security. And this required only the signature of two cabinet ministers. Okay, the person so accused did have some rights, and that that would be to challenge the certificate stating that they were a threat to national security. However, as we found out in the Ernst Sindel's case, the victim was really hamstrung. For instance, the government could rely on secret information or secret informants. And the defense would not be told who the informant was, or the accuser was, would not be able to see the documents. That would not be in all cases, but the government could do that. Well, can you imagine trying to refute a statement by a person who, as far as you're concerned, is anonymous, you don't have a name, accusing you of this or that? Now, we had exactly that. We fought that. And it was like batting at shadows with sunglasses on. One of the things in any trial that the defense wants to do is to be able to cross-examine witnesses. You know, if a witness says, you know, on such and such a day, I saw you reverse your car down your driveway and run over a neighbor's bike. Okay, well, first of all, if this person has such testimony, he's identified. He gets up on his hind legs in court and stands in the witness box and gives his testimony, and then it can be cross-examined. Well, imagine a situation where there is no person. We have a statement, a vague statement of the gist of his testimony. That, supposing that's all you had. Well, one of the first things I would do if I were the defense lawyer or attorney would be to examine closely. Well, now you say on such and such a day you happen to see this man reverse his car down the driveway and run over the neighbor's bike. Well, one of the important things to know is, well, who are you as the witness? Now, you might be an entirely credible person who's lived in the neighborhood for many years and regularly is out on your front porch reading the newspaper at that time of day. On the other hand, you might be the village idiot. It makes a difference. Also, I would perhaps, if I was skeptical about the testimony, want to inquire more carefully as to, well, where were you that day? I understand you're a long-distance truck driver and you're frequently away. Were you, in fact, in town that day? Well, that's the way a cross-examination would go, and I'm keeping it very simple. Well, imagine trying to cross-examine evidence. Well, you don't know who the informant is, so you have no way of assessing or assailing that credibility, and not knowing who that person is, you cannot really launch anything like an effective cross-examination. That was one of the problems that we faced. I've been hearing this ad. I should complete that. That story, as far as it goes, and why I'm so much against anonymous complaints. Finally, we were able to winkle out of the prosecution. Well, what it was that caused them to label Ernst Zundel as a terrorist. You have to understand, Ernst Zundel never broke any laws in Canada. Had been an employer, taxpayer. In fact, being a typical German, he paid his bills to the last penny. Never being convicted of any crime in Canada. So how can he be a threat to national security? Also, he came out of a German Seventh-day Adventist background, and they're pacifists. And the reason he chose Canada over the United States when he emigrated in 1958 was that Canada did not have the draft. He didn't want to go into the army. He's a pacifist. Anyway, you would think, Well, a man like that, that doesn't seem likely to be a terrorist. Okay, so what's the proof that they were prepared to share with us? Okay, this is it. You've got to follow this closely. sometime, I believe it was in the 1970s or very early 1980s, Ernst Zundel attended several lectures by Dr. William Pierce of the National Alliance. And Dr. William Pierce wrote a book called called The Turner Diaries, which foresees in the somewhat near future some form of race war in the United States. It's a novel. That's a novel. Anyway, allegedly, Timothy McVeigh read that book and blew up the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. Now, I say allegedly because there's strong reason that this is, would be a very much a digression. I won't go there right now, but there's a lot of reasons to think Timothy McVeigh didn't do it. But okay, let's assume he did do it. So, let's see. Ernst Zundel attended a couple of lectures by Dr. William Pierce. Incidentally, he never gave him any money. Never joined the National Alliance. Dr. William Pierce wrote a book called The Turner Diaries. Timothy McVeigh allegedly read it and blew up the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. Therefore, Ernst Zundel's a terrorist. Have I left out a step or two or three or four along the way? No. That was the line of thinking. Now, it's got to be understood, Dr. William Pierce never told Timothy McVeigh or anybody else to go and kill people. It was a novel. Any more than you could blame Charles Dickens for young people turning into thieves and working for a cunning master of thieves like Fagin in the book David Copperfield. It's a story. It's a story. It's not advocacy. So, okay, Ernst Zundel had nothing to do with Timothy McVeigh. Never met him, never told him to do anything. Dr. William Pierce never met Timothy McVeigh. Never told him to do anything. Timothy McVeigh is alleged to have bombed the Murrah Building. Even if that's true, what's that got to do with Dr. William Pierce, or even more so, what does it have to do with Ernst Zundel? Well, it has exactly nothing to do with him. But that was the proof. And that is one of the huge dangers of allowing for anonymous testimony. Well, here's an interesting story out of today's National Post. Sailor. Canadian sailors and the public can vote as the Royal Canadian Navy moves to drop the term seaman for its most junior sailors and replace it with a gender-neutral term. Wow, okay. may not have much to do with military preparedness, but we're going to be politically and gender correct. The top brass thinks seamen may deter recruits. Really. These people are so out of touch. So it means what, a woman who wants to join the Navy, and I'm not really thinking they should, but okay, is going to say, well, I won't join the Navy because I don't want to be a seaman. Really, is that the level decisions are made at? I doubt it. Anyway, the Navy's already short, 850 sailors. So if they change the name from seaman to something else, you think that people will enlist en masse? I doubt it. Current ranks are called ordinary seaman, able seaman, leading seaman, and master seaman. The poll will have two options. At Navy, they give you the
a URL. One replaces seaman with sailor in existing ranks. So it will be ordinary sailor, able sailor, leading sailor, and master sailor. And the other would drop adjectives such as able and leading and replace them with first class. So it would be first sailor first class, sailor second class. We have political correctness run amok. And you see the, I think so befuddled are our leaders that, I mean, if we're to take what they say seriously, they cannot even make a logical connection. Well, why is the Navy 850 sailors short?
Well, I don't pretend to know all the reasons.
But certainly one of them would not be because seamen are called, the current term for the lower ranks is seamen rather than sailor. Did you really think that that's the reason people may not find joining the Navy an attractive proposition? Well, I would have huge trouble believing that. It utterly defies reason and common sense. There may be a whole lot of reasons, but I doubt the name is one of them. People may not know, at a guess, that there are these opportunities. They may not know what the opportunities are. They may not know what these people are paid. All of those might be perfectly viable lines of inquiry. Oh, yeah, I keep hearing this ad on the radio. And it's for Orillia, Ontario. And it's from the town of Orillia, and which is in Cottage Country, just north of, it's about 60 miles north of Toronto, and just north of Lake Simcoe, little town of Orillia. It's been a vacation spot of hire for well over 100 years. Well, they announced that from Thursday to Sunday, visitors will have to pay a $50 parking fee, which seems rather steep to me. Yeah, you really don't want the visitors, do you? Oh yes, and a further $50 fee to launch a boat. I assume that means that if you bring up your own, 10 horsepower aluminum boat and you want to put it out on the lake and scoot around or fish, you have to pay them $50. That strikes me as setting up barriers. Oh, yeah. And these fees have to be paid with credit card or debit card, no cash. Yeah, you see where that is so very, very politically and medically correct. And, another push in the direction of the cashless society, which is the way the New World Order wants to go with this. I intend to get on the website, and hopefully we'll get an email address or somebody I can write to, and I'm going to protest and say, this ad that's been repeated a number of times on one of the major, probably the major talk radio show in Toronto, 1010 News, is distinctly hostile. I take it as don't bother coming to be held up for $50 parking when you're coming up there and, undoubtedly helping the local economy. This seems hostile. But more than that, You won't accept cash? Well, you're not going to bully me. I'm just going to pass you by.
But people have to stand up and object, because we are being bullied in a way that I don't think, well, I don't have any recollection of anything like this. I will say perhaps not since the war, but maybe not even then. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow. But in the meantime, I'm going to take my musical break tonight and play some tunes from the Grand Ole Opry from the 1970s. An era of some really great performers. Dolly Parton, Loretta Lynn, Conway Twitty, and so many more. Here we are.
And now here's Marty Robbins.
I told Mary about us, told her about our great sin. Mary cried and forgave me. Mary took me back again. Said if I would have been free, I could be free of a more. But I don't want to be, and I don't want to see Mary cry anymore. Oh, devil woman, devil woman, love me. Devil woman, let me be, and leave me alone. I want to go home. Mary's waiting and weeping down in our shack for the sea. Even after I've heard her, Mary's still in love with me. Devil woman, it's over. Trap no more by your charm. Cause I don't wanna stay, I wanna get away. Woman, let go of my arm. Oh, devil woman, devil woman, love me. Devil woman, let me be, and leave me alone. I wanna go home. Running along by the seashore, running as fast as I can. Even the seagulls are happy, glad I'm coming home again. Never again will I ever cause another tear to fall. Down the beach I stay, what belongs to me, the one I want most of all. Oh, devil woman, don't hold me. Devil woman, let me be, and leave me alone. I won't stay home and cry tonight like all the nights before. I've just learned that I don't really need you anymore. I found a little place downtown where guys like me can go, and they've got bright lights and country music. Bright lights and country music, a bottle and a glass. Soon I'll be forgetting that there ever was a past. And when everybody asks me what helped me forget so fast, I'll say bright lights and country music. A table by a bandstand, a bottle filled with wine. Honky-tonks were made for men with women on their mind. Nothing else can take away this loneliness of mine. Quite like bright lights and country music. Bright lights and country music, a bottle and a glass. Soon I'll be forgetting that there ever was a band. And everybody asks me what helped me forget so fast, I'll say bright lights and country music. I love those bright lights and country music.
Every once in a while, a song comes out that really warps your mind, you know, that puts chills up your arms and your legs, and you scratch, you know, every once in a while. And the little lady who sings this song records for Epic Records. Would you make welcome Miss Tammy Wynette, ladies and gentlemen?
Today I sat alone at the window, and I watched our little girl outside playing with the little boy next door, like so many times before. But something didn't seem quite right today, so I went outside to see what they were doing. And then the teardrop made my eyes grow dim, as I heard their name again, and I hung my head in shame when I heard our little girl say to him, I don't want to play house, I know it can't be fun. I've watched mommy and daddy, and if that's the way it's done, I don't want to play house. It makes she played house, my daddy said goodbye. I don't want to play house, I know it can't be fun. I've watched mommy and daddy, and if that's the way it's done, I don't want to play house. Oh, time she played house, my daddy said goodbye.
Here's a young lady that I know you'll want to put your hands together for. She's had hit records all around the world, and she's singing her biggest one called The End of the World. A nice Grand Ole Opry welcome for Skeeter Davis.
Thank you. Paul Fromm here on the Fighting Side of Me, back with you again tomorrow. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came, and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes, and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf.